This meeting is being recorded.
So this is the Ohio Writers Guild, and I am Kathy Venner. I'm a passive income coach. You can find me at kathyvenner.com. I have an online international academy, and I teach all things passive income. You can see here in my little Hollywood square, it says passive income coach. And I do everything from writing for passive income to real estate, blogging. I've got a group of guys and gals that are bloggers now, and they're monetizing their blogs. And then again, I have a lane that's called Building a Better Business. And through the Building a Better Business, we have a lot of students there that have all kinds of backgrounds. I have a gal that wants to do health food. I have another gal who is a homesteader. And I have a gal who sells Legal Shield. So we've got all kinds of backgrounds there. And it's all about how to make it passive income so that you can do all the fun stuff that you want to do. Because for me, and the reason that this group is so important to me, is because for me, from a very early age, I've always said that someday when I retire, well, I am now, I want to write mystery novels. And so, yes, folks, I do have one started and I have it kind of mapped out. And I think I'm on like chapter 4. So it's just a start. Now, I am published, but everything that I've published so far has all been more of an educational piece or an inspirational piece. It has not been that mystery novel that I've always said I wanted to write. So I am started. I've started. So there you go. So just start, get started. So anyway, that's who I am. I am the facilitator of this group. You can find us on Facebook. You can also find us on meetup.com, and it is under the Ohio Writers Guild. And if you click through at kathyvenner.com, you will also see where Sandy and I'm going to let Sandy share in a little bit about what she does, but you can see where Sandy and I have a little mastermind. And we just started this year at helping new authors that want to get published. And we just go through 6 steps on how to get published. And we try to answer your questions. And anyway, just to try to make you more comfortable in writing and to inspire you to get started. And then Sandy and I are both members of other writing groups. We encourage you to please, 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 please tap in to all of these writing groups, whatever group is close to you, whether you can go in person or whether you hook up with somebody online on a Zoom call, but get connected to some writing groups. That's what makes you a better writer. We all learn different ways. And sometimes, I don't know about you, but sometimes I have to see it in action first. And then I go, now that makes sense. And so we all have different learning styles. And of course, all of the authors out there have different teaching styles. So tap in and, take what you can use. We've got a couple of folks in the audience. I want to welcome Elizabeth and Jean. Thank you so much for joining us. And I am going to turn it over to Sandy next to tell us a little bit about who she is and what she does. And then we get to talk to Reagan. So Sandy, over to you.
Real quick, I will fill in. Hi, I'm Sandy Kaczurek. I am director of Into the Springs Writers Workshop in Yellow Springs, Ohio. 2024 was my fourth year, third year as director. It's changed around a little bit, somewhat like Kathy being asked, hey, do you want to take this over? I didn't say no. So I restructured it a bit. And it's called Into the Springs. It's at the Mills Park Hotel in downtown Yellow Springs Village. This coming year, which is August 2nd through the 4th, 2024 at the Mills Park, so far on the featured guest instructors include Andrew Welsh Huggins, a award-winning author known mostly for his Private Eye series starring Andy Hayes, taking place appropriately in Columbus. And Andy Hayes is a kind of disgraced quarterback for Ohio State and the Browns. So every Private Eye has to have a bit of a flaw, and that is his. And he does nonfiction as well. With that, so far, the year it's building. I'm still looking at a couple other possibilities for the roster. It's a weekend in which my instructors, featured guests, stay throughout the weekend. And all the participants stay in the same banquet hall. And to go through all those sessions with a variety of different genres, the featured guests know the variety of learning levels and experience and writing areas. So they speak to everybody as much as possible while celebrating their own particular talent in the writing world. I also have the Ohio Narrator Audiobook Narrators Association, led by Becky White. She and her group is coming in for an extensive how to create your own audiobooks at home, or how the audiobook narrators would do it for you. So far, I'm still creating that kind of staff for the year, but by early next month, I should have my website back open to the public with some great information. Thank you, Kathy.
Yes. And for those of you that are listening, the workshop is the first weekend in August of 2024. So mm-hmm. mark your calendars, save those dates. It falls on the same weekend as my class reunion. And last year I skipped the class reunion. This year it's my 50th. So I'm going to sneak out on Saturday night and go over to my class reunion, but I'm not going to miss the writer's weekend. I'm still going because it's worth it. So for those of you that are listening, it's worth it. So tap in, find those writers groups and connect with some folks and start writing. Yes. I love it. I love it. Sandy, thank you so much.
Sure.
Now I'm going to probably really mess up Reagan's last name. So now let me try it though. Pietruha?
It's Pietruha.
So Pietruha.
Yeah, pretty close.
Pietruha. Okay. I was close. I wanted to give it a try. My dream is to travel more internationally. And so, again, it's like everything else. Just start. You got to give it a try. So I always try to pronounce something, even though sometimes I terribly mess it up. So thank you. Thank you for your courtesy and me messing up your last name, Reagan, but thank you so much for being here. Now, Reagan, not only she writes, she edits, and she consults. So, gosh, I love your background. I'm going to let you tell our listeners a little bit more about how you got started, a little bit of your history on how you even got up to the point of writing a book. But anyway, she has a book called The Animal I Can't Name. She won the 2015 Two of Cups Press Competition. Her debut poetry collection, Head of Gorgon, is also now published. Am I right?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. So it is. It's out now. And she has a memoir in progress. So, gosh, you're busy, 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 busy. And she's been published. She's been on podcasts. She's got blog. She's everything. She does all of it. I love it. Reagan, tell us a little bit about your background. How did you actually... like me, I knew at age 12, I was like, I want to be a writer someday. I had no clue what that even meant. How early did you know that you wanted to be a writer? And what is your background? What did you do leading up to finally starting to write?
Well, I learned how to read pretty early. So I was reading around age 2.5. And I think that really kind of started everything for me. I've just always been drawn to books. I've always been a little bookworm, you know, with my head in the pages and all that stuff. And I think that love of storytelling and having an experience that you can't even in some cases have in your own real life. You know, some of these are fantasy, you know, sci-fi, all different genres, you know, things that can't happen in your actual world can happen in the world of these pages. Right. And so I was very drawn to reading to start. My first poem was actually, after my grandma died, one of my grandmothers, my paternal grandmother. So this was in seventh grade. And it just so happened to be the timing of My teacher in seventh grade English teacher kind of having us, the class, you know, try to write poems. And so that was my first, at least my first recollection of writing a poem. I had a teacher in second grade who had us like write and illustrate, you know, little stories. You know, we drew little like stick figures with crayon and stuff, but that technically was prose, albeit, you know, at a second grade level. But yeah, my first poem was actually in seventh grade. But actually when I went into undergrad, I focused in fiction, but I took a lot of poetry workshops. And so then when I went on to get my MFA, I focused more in poetry. And I don't know, I mean, I don't really, I do think of myself as somebody who writes all different types of stuff, mm-hmm. because I have written all different types of stuff. So I've written fiction, I've written nonfiction, I've written poetry, I've written professionally and creatively. I've got a bunch of bylines and some magazines and stuff like that. Those that I used to work for, those that I was editor in chief for. So I guess I'm just, I don't know. I was drawn to it as a reader and I just kind of kept going with it. And there was, I don't know, it wasn't really like anything, like, how would you say? Like, I guess it wasn't anything unpredictable. It wasn't like, you know, you couldn't kind of see it coming, but there was a heavy foreshadowing, I guess one might say.
Okay.
That I was probably going to go in that direction. And I did in fact go in that direction. So here I am.
So, okay. So now you're in college, are you working at another job? I mean, we've got brand new authors and a lot of their questions is I don't have time to write, or how do you find time? And I've got to get to the job. I've got to pay the bills. And I really want to write, but you know, it takes time to be a good writer. It really takes time.
It takes time to be a writer, like good or bad or anything in between. Yes. Just period. It takes time. And that Absolutely. Is the luxury. Yeah. I'm very lucky and very privileged to have had the experiences that I've had that have allowed me to do that. And so I do want to acknowledge that because it is important. So in undergrad, I was on scholarship. So now when I was undergrad, this was the late 90s, early 2000s. So it was very different back then. Like school was more affordable, I just don't know like what's going on, right? I mean, with college tuition, like, I just don't know. Like, this is all just crazy to me. That being said, I was on full scholarship. So I was able, because I was a nerd basically in school, in high school, I was on an academic scholarship. So I was able to go through undergrad without having to work.
Okay.
So that there's that privilege, there's that luxury of having time to be able to focus solely on my studies, which in part was the writing, because the creative writing degree has you do workshops and has you read a bunch of literature and all that stuff. Then I went out into the working world and I got a full-time job. And I didn't.
And can I ask, doing what? What was the full-time job?
I had a couple before I went back to grad school. So I started out for a brief few months working for a suite of personal injury attorneys, which I do not recommend.
Okay.
Moved on to a private investigation company, which was interesting in its own way. then moved on to do some closed captioning. And actually that job was sort of a template for me, for the job that I'm in now as just a copy editor, because that job really allowed me to understand what I would need as a writer to make it sustainable. And what I need as a writer is to be able to come into a job, do the job while I'm there, and leave the job when I walk out of that door. And that job captioning was exactly that. I would come in, I would do the captioning. If I didn't finish a section or whatever, the next person was there to take it over. I didn't have any kind of management or anything, responsibilities. So it was just very, it was very low responsibility and low stress. And that really worked for me. So when I got into that job, I started thinking more, okay, you know, grad school, I should be, you know, kind of prepping myself and preparing a portfolio and getting my ducks in a row if I'm really going to do this. And so that's what I did. So I had the day job, which incidentally was actually a night job. I worked 4 to midnights. And that was pretty wild, but you know, during the days and of course my days off, I could focus on my own writing. And so that's what I did. So I had poems left over from undergrad. I was working on some new stuff and I got a portfolio ready. I ended up enrolling in just a single workshop, just to kind of get some feedback and fine tune and work with another professor before I actually applied for my MFA. Got in, went to my MFA at Bowling Green State in Ohio. So that's my Ohio connection. And I was also on scholarship there. So the writers that are accepted there are on scholarship. They get, you usually either have to teach or, well, we had to teach. There were also some other options as far as like what you were more or less being compensated for, even though it was kind of like a, like it was with the understanding that this is covering your tuition. So you have to kind of like do something besides like just get to go to workshops for free. So one of the things that I did was I was basically like an executive assistant to the director of creative writing of the program. And so, which it sounds very boring, but actually I was like the chauffeur for the visiting writers. So I did a lot of admin for the visiting writers series. And so that's what I did for that. But I, again, in grad school, I didn't have to work. Again, it was a luxury. I was very privileged to have that experience. And I really, really do recommend to anybody who's thinking of going into a program, please go to funded programs. Please make somebody else pay for your education. Like education at this point is like just too outrageous and out of control to do that. And if you can't afford to do that, there are other options. There are low residency programs that are much more affordable. There are other outside workshops like what you both do. There are residencies, different things that are just, that are more affordable and more sustainable in the long term, if that's what you want to do. But yeah, I mean, that's how I kind of provided for myself and made the time for my writing as well. And now I've found myself in the same type of job where it's very low responsibility, low stress. And I left a directorship in communications because I just had no time to focus on my writing. I mean, I was really struggling. I was doing, you know, I would get maybe one day on a weekend, maybe a month where I felt like I could really focus because the job was just, it was a lot. And yeah, I mean, it was a lot of responsibility, a lot of stress. And I knew that I wasn't going to be able to make the strides that I wanted to make in that kind of role. And now that's me. Now, again, I have the luxury of being able to say I can walk away from that role. Part of that is I don't have kids. I don't have to worry about mouths to feed besides my own. So again, a privilege, you know, a luxury from my perspective. I'm not knocking kids. I'm just saying I'm able to do the things that I'm able to do because of some choices that I made.
I get it. And so for our listeners, if you're out there listening to this, just realize the number one aha for me, just listening to Reagan right now, is that she has immersed herself with around writers in that whole environment of writers. And so again, you can decide whether and hear me when I say this, you can decide whether you want to write or whether you want to be a writer. And there is a difference. You can write and you can be something else and you can write in your free time, or you can be a writer. And if you're going to be a writer, I think you have to immerse yourself in that writing community. And again, I see that's what Reagan has done, and it shows.
Well, you know, it's interesting because I agree and I also disagree with that statement. So in the college environment, which is not right for every writer, I must say, it's that those were my main sort of writing communities. Mm-hmm. I still keep in touch very loosely with some people from that community. But I also think one of the most valuable things I got from my education was the ability and sort of willingness to stand on my own as a writer. Now, when I say stand on my own, I don't mean that I never talk to other writers or I never do any workshops or any of that kind of stuff. But what I do mean is I truly believe that if you're reading, you're engaging with other writers. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not, there's lots of forms of community. Some communities are not safe for certain types of writers and writing. And that's the truth. I've witnessed it. That's been my lived experience. It's been others' lived experience. And so I really want to make that clear that, you know, I think having a community is important, but there are many different ways that you can go about defining that community. And it's really important to find a safe space, because much like finding the right job fit for you, that's going to allow you to find and kind of amplify your writing sort of template and pace and regimen. You need to have that safe space too, whether it's you're communing with other authors through reading their work, you're communing with other authors on social media about creative stuff, not just like goofy stuff. You know, you're doing workshops. There's lots of different ways to go about that. So I mean, this is just my opinion, of course, mm-hmm. but I wanted, you know, I want to clarify that, because for the most part, by and large, at this stage in my career, I am a very independent and solo writer. That's what works best for me. But I understand that that is not the right choice for everyone. But it's also really important to find that safe space.
Yes, absolutely. Reagan, thank you so much for that. How did you know you were ready to actually write a book? What was it in you that said, this is the time?
Well, it was less this is the time, because, you know, your MFA tells you it's the time.
Okay. So
your program is like, hey, chop, chop, you have a thesis due.
This is the time.
Yeah, it's like, oh, well, there's that deadline. Hope you got something. So it was less about that, at least initially in grad school, than finding the stuff. For me, it was more about finding the story. And actually, it's funny because I realized, so Head of a Gorgon began as a thesis in grad school, but it had a somewhat different perspective and focus. And I sort of knew, I think deep down, the story that I really wanted to tell. And that is the story that's reflected in Head of a Gorgon. But I, again, coming back to that idea of safe space, I don't think that the MFA program was that space for me to explore fully that idea and what I wanted that book to be. And so it was after grad school that I just kept working. I just kept working, and I let the work kind of, in some respects, tell me, show me like the direction that, it was going. So not on an unconscious level, but I think one thing that I've noticed about my writing is my writing tends to know what I'm kind of obsessing over, brooding on, like, you know, what I'm kind of compulsively concentrating on before I am consciously aware of that. And so that's what I mean by that. If you're, and that's not it for everybody, but that's it for me. So I was writing, I kept kind of moving through the story and where, you know, just exploring different kind of avenues and stuff. with it. And then it started becoming clearer and clearer and clearer. And then it was like, well, yeah, of course I want to write about that because that's part of my lived experience. And so then that's sort of when it was like, okay, that's the book.
Well, how long did it take you to put that together?
Well, so I started, the thesis began in 2007.
Okay.
And I didn't start submitting a final copy for publication until 2018, so over a decade.
Okay.
And, you know, which is a long time for a book of poetry. Most people don't take that long with preparing a book of poetry, and that's fine. Like, you don't need to take over a decade like I did. If you took more than a decade, that is also fine. Like, I believe that it's more important for me to have the story down and like have the book that I'm interested in reading and I feel is really what I meant to say than to rush something just because I need to have a publication credit mm-hmm. or feel like I'm in some kind of competition. Like I'm very not that writer. I'm not the kind of writer who is like fueled by like seeing other people like cranking out a book every quarter, every, you know, year or whatever, and thinking, oh my God, I got to do the same thing. I'm just not that person. Like I have certain stories that I feel very deeply that I need to tell. This is one of them, the memoir is another. And unless I find that I have more of those types of stories, like I don't necessarily feel the need to like just crank something out for the sake of a byline or for the sake of a publication. And maybe that's because I've cranked out a lot of bylines on the professional side. I don't know. Like, I can't tell you why I feel the way that I feel about it. That's just how I feel about it.
Well, how did you decide the arrangement of The Head of Gorgon? How did you decide on that arrangement? And then the title, how did you decide on the title?
Sure. So one thing that I appreciate about myself as a writer is the two kind of big stories that I'm telling, so Head of a Gorgon and then the memoir in progress. So one cool thing about a memoir is like you already know the story, right? Because
right, yes.
Oh, you don't have to worry about order. You can mess with the order or whatever, but the details are already there. Similarly, Head of a Gorgon is more of like it's too short to be a novel in verse, but it's more like a novella in verse. So there's a chronological order to it. So like once I started kind of figuring out, okay, this is sort of what like the story wants to be, then it was like, okay, well then obviously like A has to come before B because this is an alphabet, you know? So it became very clear to me, and then, okay, well then that means that there's this sort of plot piece missing that I need to draft a poem about this, and I need to fit in, and that's going to go in between this poem and that poem because that's the order of the thing.
The order. Yeah.
And like I said, I appreciate that about myself because one of the things that I know a lot of poets in particular really struggle with is like getting their manuscripts in order. If you are a prolific poet, I would suggest trying a novel in verse or trying, you know, something along the lines of what I did, where it becomes very obvious to you what that order should be. It makes your life a whole lot easier. And then you can, you know, also do those other kinds. It might bring some clarity to how you organize in the future if you also try writing one of those.
Well, what kind of world were you creating when you first started with that particular piece? What type of a world are you creating, and what, how did you come up with the threads to connect that together?
Well, so I was pretty influenced by Anne Carson's autobiography of Red, and so that is a true novel in verse. So again, you're getting a lot of stuff in chronological order. Mm-hmm. You're seeing the main character age and go through life in the typical, you know, okay, here's childhood, here's adolescence, here's adulthood, that sort of thing. But I also was really inspired by the late Jason Schindler. I had come across some of his work, and I found it, my thesis advisor kind of described it as like very insular and like being in a vacuum. And I found that concept, well, and that is very true of some of his late work that was published posthumously. He was writing about his cancer and things like that, and just being basically having this deep awareness that, you know, your time is short, which we all know we're going to die, but, you know, we're not necessarily in deep, deep touch with that on any given day or moment, the way that he was in that late work. So that kind of really intrigued me. And I wanted to kind of mimic that in this world of survivorship. So the story in Head of a Gorgon is a reimagining of the myth of Medusa from her perspective. And it's a series, it's persona poems, mostly from her perspective, although you get Poseidon's perspective as well as some other perspectives in there.
I noticed that the Medusa name is missing.
Right.
It's absent in that work. So yeah. That's an interesting twist.
Yeah. So one of the things that I wanted people to be able to do with the work is put themselves in the position of the I in the first person. So this book is first person, and it is, again, it is persona. So it's not Reagan. It's this Medusa character. But not giving her that name allows people to, I think, enter the experience more fully as the I. Should they choose to, you know, I can't control how readers connect to a work or don't, but that was the intention.
Okay.
To kind of be able to allow people to enter the work in a different way by not distancing them with a name that they don't have, right? Because who's named Medusa? Nobody's named Medusa.
Right.
Names their kid Medusa. Although I'd be interested to find out if somebody did.
So how did you develop those conversations in between the poems?
So are you talking about the actual dialogue poems or?
Yes.
So that part in particular came from the earlier workshop experience of telling some of these stories from Medusa's persona. And then some of my workshop collaborators basically saying, okay, so like we're getting this perspective from her, right? And that's great and we believe her, but we're not kind of like seeing like what happened on the other side. Like again, it wasn't like they weren't doubting what she was saying per se. It was more like they wanted to see and experience it for themselves.
Okay. And so
then I started incorporating some of the voice of Poseidon and then building that dialogue between them so that the reader can sort of understand, okay, so not just based on what Medusa is saying, he said, but here's actually what he said. And so I definitely feel like it's more of like a show versus tell in that layout. And so it's important in that regard. But also I think it allows the reader to kind of experience this sort of gaslighty type of stuff that happens usually with survivors and abusers. Mm-hmm. So there's an actual experience for the reader of basically being gaslit by an abuser. And then there's also the experience of, okay, well, here's how one, in this case, Medusa, kind of reacted and responded and kind of a reflection of where she was at that particular point in the storyline in response to that sort of abusive trickery type stuff going on Poseidon's behalf.
Very interesting. What poem has the most meaningful backstory for you, and what is that backstory?
There are a couple, actually. One of them is the second poem of the book, which the earliest draft came out of the MFA program, and the assignment was write the best poem you've ever written. That was literally the assignment. Again, from my thesis advisor, Larissa, who is brilliant and a genius, and also assigns things like write the best poem you've ever written, which sends everybody into hysterics and panics. But that's actually for the best. And so
okay,
I found myself being in that original draft, being just, I really amped the sort of like authority kind of that I wielded in the voice with that particular poem. And while it's gone through several revisions since, especially as the story changed from the thesis to what Head of a Gorgon became, that poem actually got nominated for a Pushcart Prize. So I was really
congratulations.
So in some respects, maybe it might be the best ever poem. I can tell you for sure it was not when it first came out, but I think in some respects it kind of turned out to be. I guess it depends on who you ask, but so that's one.
Obviously you won an award, so obviously
it was a nomination. I didn't win Pushcart. It was just a nomination, but still it was nice to be nominated for that
Pushcart. Jeez.
Yeah.
So and then the other one was a poem that I had been working on since undergrad, and Martha Collins came in to one of our workshops. She was like a guest. She was a visiting writer, reader for like one or two days, I think she was there for whatever. And she came into our workshop, and it just so happened to be the day that I was revisiting this poem that like I had been working on for years, and I just could not get it right. And I didn't know what was the part that I was missing? Like, what was the thing that was wrong? Which for me is an unusual, I have to say for me, that's an unusual experience. I know maybe that sounds a little weird because I think for most writers, that's a very common experience. But for me, I generally know, especially if I take time away, when I come back, I'm like, it's there, like the alarm, like this is wrong. This is the problem. And it just kind of blares and flashes at me. And then I know, okay, this is the part that I need to fix. And so this one was really troubling. Like, it was really bugging me. So anyway, so she comes into this class and, you know, we go around and she reads this poem and she's like, well, you know, this section, so it's a 4-part poem and it actually is in the Head of a Gorgon. She's like, this particular section doesn't have any connection to the daughter's head. And all of the other sections do. And I'm just like, do they? And I had to go back. I'm the writer of this poem. And I had to go back. I'm like, do they? And I'm looking and I'm like, okay, there's head in there. And then the second section, oh yeah, okay, I can see where she's getting that. And then the third section, oh yeah, there's nothing about that. And then the fourth section, it's back again. So that's weird. Oh. And it was just kind of like the light bulb moment. And then the revision kind of, it was a very easy revision afterwards. So that I thank Martha Collins for her wisdom on that.
We call those aha moments. So we all have them.
Yeah. And then that was the kind of key to solving that particular poem. And like I said, that one also appears in Head of a Gorgon as well.
I love it. Now, how much did you collaborate on the cover, that whole design, and come up with the cover design?
Yeah, so I'll show everybody. So this is what Head of a Gorgon looks like. And for me, the actual concept of her kind of her face coming out of the mirror, looking at her head with the snakes coming out, and like this sort of recognition and horror that the snakes are within her head. That concept was kind of came along as I was working on the book. And so I knew at a certain point that that's the image I was going for. And I sort of did my own sketch, and it, you know, turned out as well as you might imagine, a poet trying to be an artist, a visual artist, without really that much training in it, turned out. But it gave me something to at least share with a real artist. That was done by Jackie Liu, who's incredibly talented. I don't even think she's 20 yet. I mean, she's
wow.
I mean, she's just a complete virtuoso.
But you had the vision, and then she could then make it into something.
Right. So I kind of gave her the general gist, and she just turned it into this thing of like beautiful horror. Which is exactly what it needed to be, and perfect, and even like our favorite color is purple, and so it was just like the whole like connection was
okay.
Amazing. It was like she read my mind, but like way better than anything I could have really imagined. So yeah, that's how the cover came to be.
Now you've done all of your own publicity, all of your own marketing. How do you wear all these hats? I mean, how did you know, you know, here you are, you're writing it. Now you have a vision to illustrate it. And so now here you are marketing it. How do you do that?
How does one do that? Well, again, I had the benefit of being a director of communications for several years. So these were skills that I picked up in the workplace. And so one thing that I don't know that I would recommend, because God, I hate that job. And honestly, I hate doing my own publicity. I mean, I loathe it. It's like so unfun. It's so like, it's just like torture to me. It's the exact opposite antithesis of how I feel of with writing. It's like everything that I love about writing, it's like, the hate is so like, here's the spectrum: writing good, PR, marketing bad. Like, but I know how
but
to
it's do so it. Important it's so important it though
is. And I know how to do it, and the reason I know how to do it is because I had a job that paid me to do it,
okay,
and to learn it. And so what I can't say that I would recommend doing it for extended amounts of time, because like I said, I think if anybody is any like even remotely close to me in personality, they're going to find that they also similarly despise it. But if you can get somebody to pay you to learn how to do this stuff, I mean, you know, there's really kind of like no better way, unless you're independently wealthy and can just pay somebody else to do
just it. Just pay somebody else to do it. Right.
But
I get it.
That being said, you know, part of the problem with that is that number one, there's a lot of shysters out there, you know, so you can't necessarily trust people who say that they're, you know, reputable publicists and PR and marketer, you know, marketers or PR representatives. But the other thing is that, you know, if you do find somebody, if you have no idea what you're supposed to be doing and you have no experience or education in it, and you can read books about this too. You can do workshops, you can do all the things that you would do with writing, you can do with this other stuff too. But if you have like absolutely no idea, somebody can easily come along and take advantage of you and just take your money and run. And you don't even know if you got your money's worth or not, or what. You're just left with whatever the result is, and it probably won't be very good. So it behooves anybody, even if you're not going to do it yourself, to actually just learn a little bit about it. And you know, if people want to reach out to me, I have my website. It's my first name, Reagan, with my middle initial M, like Medusa, and my last initial P. .wordpress.com. So you can always find me there if you have questions.
I'll let you put that in the chat at some point before we go. Yeah. And also, am I correct? You have a blog and you've shared some of this information in your blog. Am I right?
Yeah, absolutely. I've shared, mm-hmm. I've shared my whole like publicity experience, self DIY publicity and PR and marketing and all that stuff on my blog series, which is also part of my website. So just on my website, there's a little tab for blog, and you can just access it all there too.
Perfect. Perfect. And again, I'm going to let you put that in the chat before we go, so that when I actually post the recording of this, I can post that link so folks can get in touch with you. So yes, thank you so much. Yes, they're in the chat. And we have Elizabeth, Jean, and Sylvia listening in the audience today. And if you have any questions, put those in the chat. If you have some questions for Reagan while we're talking. Now, Reagan, tell me, what was your expectation before you published versus after you published? What was your big aha moments in there that you would like to share with our listeners?
I almost hate publishing as much as I hate PR. No, I mean, it's true. Like, the joy for me, and maybe not everybody's like this, the joy for me is really in the writing. It's in the creating. Yes. It's in that sort of inspiration-driven flow of just, like, you know, you just feel connected to something greater, I guess. And publishing is like, it's just so difficult nowadays. And part of what makes it difficult, again, is that there are going to be these people who are not ready. Mm-hmm. There are going to be these people who take you for a ride. You have to kind of educate yourself. You have to weed through and weed out a lot of the bad seeds. And then you have to also decide, you know, okay, well, with presses that are reputable, do these values align with mine? Because if you go on social media, you will probably find that a lot of them do not align with your perspectives on maybe other things, maybe some political things, maybe some personal things. So there's, and that may not be important to people. It may just be a me thing, but like, it was important for me to have a book about survivorship in really safe hands, as opposed to people who maybe don't kind of have respect for the subject matter, or like don't believe survivors. That's kind of not good. Mm-hmm. So there are those kind of things to consider. There's a lot of kind of money sucks when it comes to publishing. Like for poetry, a lot of times the way to get your book published is through a contest, and contests have fees. And you don't necessarily really even know, unfortunately, if every contest you're submitting to is really reading it or having like mm-hmm. a really educated reader reading it. So some of these contests, they may have readers that are like students, and I'm not knocking a student. I was a student once myself, many times over, but that I don't know that I necessarily feel great about somebody with sort of not a deep kind of foundational knowledge reading a book and judging it for potential publication on that level, on like a contest level where people are paying. I think there's a lot of things to consider with respect to that. So it's kind of a bit of a minefield. And this is not to discourage people from publishing. I think publishing can be very important. And I mean, certainly I love having my books like in the flesh, the paper flesh mm-hmm. out in the world, and that's great. But the actual act of publishing and all of the different things that you need to educate yourself on, it really kind of just, it's like all of the joy that maybe you built, like just build a lot of joy doing the writing, because I guarantee you at least some, if not all of that joy is going to be sucked out of you through the publication process. From finding a decent publisher to like understanding contracts and making sure you're getting good royalties, and are they going to help you with PR or not? And are you okay with that or not? Or all of those things, it's a lot, and it's not fun. I mean, I don't know anybody who has ever said, you know, wow, you know, trying to get my book published was so much fun. I know nobody who's ever said that, and there's a reason. Self-publishing nowadays is really taken off, and I think that there are definitely benefits to that if people are interested in exploring that. But that doesn't mean you don't have to still educate yourself. So right. It's not kind of like a get out of jail free card with this. Like you, I'm not very well versed in the self-publishing sphere. I've only kind of looked at some different groups and what mm-hmm. different people are saying about their experiences with self-publishing. But just because you self-publish doesn't mean you don't have challenges. It just means you have different challenges. And so again, just really educating yourself, and however you do that, whether you're reading books, entering groups, you know, workshops, getting some kind of training, mm-hmm. whatever you need to do, but you still need to educate yourself. So there's no sort of like getting out of educating yourself when it comes to publishing, unless you really care so little about your work and the outcomes of the money aspect that you're just willing to like let anybody take advantage of you. I'm not, but maybe you are.
No, I get it. I get it. And I think it comes back to just getting to know, like, and trust. And the best way to do that is, again, to get involved with, like, Sandy's Writer's Workshop, and you're going to meet some good quality folks. And I think that's a great place to explore some of those publishing options. And again, once you get to know, like, and trust some folks, I think it's like getting a babysitter for your baby. You know, you're only going to leave them with the best babysitter you can find. And this book is your baby. So I get it. I understand all of that completely. And it takes time. So much time. Yeah. So speaking so about time, we have to really make time, because I find that a lot of writers are definitely readers. And so we have to decide who we're going to read. So Reagan, how do you decide who you're going to read and who are you reading right now?
So for me, I'm really drawn to more voices that kind of tell stories that are, I guess, that sort of resonate with me. So I've read a lot of books on survivorship.
Okay.
And, you know, poetry in particular. So I'm sort of drawn to what I also write about. And that's sort of my main focus. I'm really drawn to women writers, by and large. And as far as what I'm reading, I'm going to show you my stack, because I don't, right now, I've just been gung-ho with drafting. So I go through, like, it's weird. I find that I almost like binge with the writing and then the reading. So I'll like read like 20 or 30 books in like a couple months, and then I'll just do nothing but write for like 4 or 5 months. And so right now I'm in the middle of the writing binge, but here are the books that I'm going to be getting to pretty soon here, as soon as I get this.
Okay.
So hopefully by the end of the year, but definitely in 2024, this is my current stack, and I'm keeping it really small because I had a stack of 30 plus and I drove myself crazy. It was very stressful just seeing my to-be-read
stack. Yep.
Being so large, and that's why I had to like binge read. And then I was like, okay, now I got to focus back on my writing. Okay, so this one is by a colleague of mine from grad school, but she was actually in literature and she ended up writing. So this is Jessica Alexander's Dear Enemy. So this is a collection of short stories and flashes. This book was recommended to me by one of my high school friends, one of my besties, because she's obviously knows about my memoir. And she wanted me to look at this one because I guess it's very unusual in the form. This is In the Dream House by Carmen Maria Machado.
Okay.
And then this is one that I've been meaning to get to for a very long time. And I just recently picked this book up and then went on into the writing binge. So I was already in the middle of the writing binge by the time I ordered this one. But this is by a colleague that a friend that I made on Twitter, actually. So this is Talk Smack to a Hurricane by Lynn Jensen Lamp.
Okay.
And it's poetry. And then this is somebody who I did a fundraiser for a survivorship organization called Resilience out of Chicago. So we did a poetry reading and we raised $1,000 through the poetry reading for survivors. And one of the readers, who is also the editor-in-chief at Persephone's Daughter, which is a survivorship-focused literary journal that I published some work in, Maggie Royer, she published this book a while ago, and I actually didn't even realize that she had. But once I realized she had, then I got the book. And so this is Survival Songs by Maggie.
Okay.
And so those are I'm keeping it small.
Yep.
Keeping it very, very small so I don't overwhelm myself, because I know that I need to finish my, I just need to finish the draft of the memoir before I start reading again. Like I just get it. So that's what I'm doing.
Reagan, this has been so much fun getting to know you and how you write and what you write and what you're reading. This has just been so much fun. Thank you so much for being on with us. We have several still that are listening. Elizabeth says no questions, but very interesting. She said, thank you so much. And Sandy said, yes, your journey from publishing your poetry is very fascinating. So love that you're here. Thank you so much for saying yes. I will post the replay for everyone. It will be in the Ohio Writers Guild. It'll be on my Academy platform, but it'll also be in the Facebook and in the Meetup. I always post the replay, and I will put in the description of the replay, I will put how to get in touch with Reagan. So anyone that wants to connect with her and mm-hmm. take a look at her website can find her and the blogs and all of her wonderful wisdom on publishing. It's all there. So Sandy, any comments or questions from you before we go?
You know, I'm impressed with your persistence, because given yes. your love of solitude and isolation when writing, and then having to come out and just fling it all to the world to say, read my stuff, read my inner soul. Yeah. It seems like one of the strongest attributes is persistence, because you believed in what you were doing and believe in what you are doing so strongly that you stuck with it through all those challenges and blocks that ahead to get your material out into the world. So
I can't wait to read the rest. Yes. On what she's writing now. Yes. The whole memoir. Yeah. Yes, absolutely.
Good.
Yeah, no, I mean, and it is persistence, and you do. Yeah. I mean, to your point, I think you really hit it on the head, Sandy. Like, you have to believe that what you're doing, I mean, and you can do it for other reasons than mm-hmm. my reasons, for sure. You know, some people just, they want to bring entertainment to the world. They want to bring joy to the world. That is not my thing. Like, I'm sorry. I want to bring that sense of resilience. I want to bring the hero's journey, but also, like, I'm just, you know, that's, but I very much believe in the stories that I'm telling, and that has kind of fueled that persistence. And yeah, I mean, that every writer needs it. If you're going to keep going with it, that it's a requirement. For sure.
Yeah. Yeah. You've got it.
Thank you so much. Jean, Sylvia, Elizabeth, thank you so much for being in the audience today. Yeah, Reagan, thank you so much for being on with us. And Sandy, as always, thank you so much for being on. And again, I'll be posting the replay for everyone so that you can go back and listen again and get that list of material that Reagan is now reading, her reading list. and see how that fits in with maybe your own reading list. I always have this whole list of titles of books, so I never run out of what I'm going to go to next, because I have a little list where I collect all of my titles, and then I start
finish before I do.
Yeah, and then I, like you, I have on my desk back in Ohio, and of course I'm in Florida now for the next 17 days, but when I'm in Ohio, I keep, I'm like Reagan, I keep my reading list kind of close right there on my desk, and I do some stuff that's not actually fiction, and so I actually have some of my books that I use as reference when I'm writing, so I love that as well. Sylvia says, thanks, everyone. So yes. And Sylvia, thank you for being with us tonight. Okay. So with that, we're going to go. And Reagan, again, thank you so much. And we will see everyone. Yes. Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
Bye, everyone.
Sure. Okay, Reagan.